It's great to be with you. This is Otto, my English bulldog. Is he sleeping? Is he already asleep? It's actually somewhat remarkable that he goes into his spot at the right time. He doesn't spend all day in that bed. It's a little eerie. And then he knows like when a half hour is up and then leaves. It's very funny. All right, anyway, welcome. I got a big theme for you today. The issue is fear. So for the last more than year and a half now, much of the world has been engulfed in fear. But not everybody. So it raises a very interesting question. Why are some people filled with fears and others not? I'm in the second category. I did not fear COVID from the beginning, as you will recall. You could watch the fireside chats from the beginning. When I said I'm living a full life, I'm meeting with friends, I'm going places. As soon as there were rallies to open up my city, in my case, Los Angeles, California, I spoke there, I hugged people, I spoke to people, I took photos with people. I have led as normal a life as possible the entire time. Not because I think I am supernaturally protected from death. I don't believe that at all. I'm a big believer in God, but I don't believe in a God who protects Dennis and not somebody else. That's not my God. And anyway, as I often say, my theology is not what do I want from God, but what does God want from me? This is a very important theological point. I might talk about it once. So the whole issue of fear, for whatever reason, I guess because we're engulfed in it, has preoccupied me. And so I decided to do on my radio show, and in case you don't know, I have a radio show 3 hours a day. It's broadcast on stations throughout the United States and on the internet around the world. It's very easy to hear. The Dennis Prager app, DennisPrager.com, and many of the radio stations that carry me. And if you spend $5 a month, not trying to sell you anything, but you should know about it, you can hear my show anytime you want without commercials, which is, I think, worth it. It's called Pragertopia. Okay. So on Fridays, I have my happiness hour. I've had this since 1999, and it's touched a lot of people's lives, including my own, by the way. Happiness hour has had a big impact on me because of what I talk about. And I admit what I talk about touches me, which is a good thing, and what callers have said to me. I've learned a tremendous amount from callers. So I was talking about fear, and I asked the question, who is more likely to be afraid? And then I got a sort of epiphany, which doesn't happen often. I got this great realization out of nowhere. It was an amazing thing thinking aloud as I was doing on my radio show, and it occurred to me to say the following. Maybe people who were coddled when they were young are more likely to be afraid when they become an adult. And boy, that blew my head off. And I had people react to it. This is the beauty of having a radio show for 30 years, that I have people reacting to everything I say from every walk of life, every religion, atheists, agnostics, Americans, non-Americans, conservatives, liberals. It's the beauty of the show. I get this vast mélange of humanity reacting. And everyone who called in to react agreed. There was a man who called up, said, I was coddled as a kid. Oh, what was it? Something to the effect, he said, my mother always said over and over, be careful, be careful, be careful. And he said it had a terrible impact on me. I have been fighting fear all of my life. It was such an open confession that it touched my heart. When people open up like that, you really feel that you're privy to almost like a therapist's studio or office. It's really something wonderful because people are anonymous. They could say the most open things. Anyway, she hurt him with this preoccupation of be careful. Now, here is the interesting thing. I sort of jumped ahead. I now remember why I thought about the coddling and fear. Because one of the ways I understand people is I try to understand me. I've always wanted to understand me. I'm not afraid. And by the way, I can't tell you what a blessing that is. There's no question I've led a happier life, a more fulfilled life. I've done more. One of the reasons I went to 131 now, countries, is that my parents never said, be careful. I told the story that when I was in my mid-20s, I told my parents, and I'm going to go going to the Middle East. I'm going to go to Syria, Lebanon, Jordan, Egypt, and Israel. So most parents, especially Jewish parents, would not think it's a great idea to go to Syria and Jordan and Lebanon and Egypt if you're a Jewish kid. That would have been their instinctive reaction. Not my parents. My mother said basically nothing, you know, call when you get back. And my father, I'll never forget what he said. You know, you're only young once. And that was it. Like, great. Have a great time. Come back alive, hopefully, and everything will be fine. And of course, I came back alive. But it's just an example of very few kids my age, Jewish or not Jewish, would not have said, oh, let me go with you to Syria. It's not on the top of people's lists of places to visit, rightly or wrongly. So I have been blessed with very little fear. I don't fear how people will react. That's why I know I get there's a lot of hatred directed to me, as you probably know. As I mentioned last week, a whole bunch of readers to the Washington Post wish that I die because I had the temerity to say that natural immunity is better than vaccinated immunity, which is actually scientifically accurate. Whatever the CDC says, Israel had a huge study and nearly every Israeli is vaccinated. So they had no reason not to promote vaccination. But they said, the scientists in Israel said, the natural immunity is stronger than vaccinated immunity. Same thing with the study at the Cleveland Clinic in the United States. But the CDC, I am sure, in reaction to my comments, which got a lot of negative attention, said what they did. But I only raise this because I want you to know that even people wishing that I drop dead doesn't bother me. And I receive a lot of love, and I receive a lot of hate, and I am grateful for the love, and I have no reaction to the hate, except that I must be doing something right. That's my biggest reaction. But back to the fear. So I tried to analyze, why do I have very little fear? And then it hit me. I wasn't coddled. At all. Truly at all. You would be shocked, especially those of you who were much younger than I, you know, those of you in your teens or 20s, you'd be astounded how little my parents complimented me, how little my parents hugged me, how rarely my parents said, I love you, and I'm fine. I'm happy, healthy, happily married, wonderful kids, all the good stuff. A lot of friends. I've led a wonderful life. Maybe not being coddled is a big part of the fact that I have led a wonderful life. And then I think about so many people from World War II on were coddled. Many in my generation, and certainly my generation coddled the next generation who are coddling their generation. Oh, they're so afraid that they should have any pain. And of course, be careful, be safe. I mentioned last week all the parents who didn't allow their young children to play with other children for over a year. In the name of fear, because of their fears, they hurt their children. That's the irony. More kids commit suicide, more kids die in car crashes, more kids die of drowning than are dying of COVID. It's unbelievably rare. So what are you afraid of? If you're don't cross the street, pedestrians get killed. Cuddle, that was the key. That's why they have safe spaces on college campuses. Lest you feel bad because a speaker came to college that you won't agree with. You need a place to escape to. This is all fear. Somebody will come to the college that you won't agree with. You must escape. So what you do is you don't learn to confront your fears. You learn to escape confronting your fears. Go to a safe space where we'll give you hot chocolate and Play-Doh and stuffed animals. And that's what they do on college campuses. Lest a 20-year-old be triggered. This is all part of the war against discomfort. It's okay to have discomfort. You have to learn to deal with it, not avoid it. And that's what, so that's a big, big factor, the fear. The fear that results from a childhood where you've been cushioned and coddled and just told how great you are, like Nate the Great. My crew is cracking up. Yes, Nathan, behind the camera, confessed right before I went on this broadcast that in his home, he was known as Nate the Great. And after I threw up, I asked, how did your siblings react to that? Now, I will admit, though, that Nathan defies my explanation. He should be a spoiled brat, and he's not. Nate the Great. That is awesome. You got to show this to your parents, Nathan. I mean, there's no question about it. Let me just say this. I was not Dennis the Great in my house. Let me make that clear at this point. That never occurred to my parents. At best, Dennis the Menace. But any kid that doesn't do his homework is not great. Not in a Jewish home, certainly. Oh, man. So it's not good to coddle kids. So I had a very interesting insight on this to share with you as well. So, the source of the greatest source of wisdom in my life is the Bible, especially the first five books, upon which the rest of the Bible is entirely based. And in those first five books, for which I'm writing my commentary, the Rational Bible, two are out, a third is coming out. I finished three and a half. It's been a very, very hard project, but very worth it. It's called the Rational Bible. And Genesis and Exodus are out. Deuteronomy is coming out in a few months. Anyway, listen to this. This is really quite a mind-blowing an insight. We're told in the Bible to fear two beings, God, and you wouldn't guess this, the other one. Could either of you guess? Who do you think we're told to fear other than God? Very good. Parents. That's right. Man shall fear his mother and father. Notice mother comes first. And it's almost always mistranslated as hold in awe. You know why? The translators don't like the Hebrew. Fear your parents? God, that is so not modern. No one should fear their parents. Oh, really? So here's a great argument for fear of parents. I asked on my radio show, I'll tell you, between the radio show and the Bible, I get a lot of wisdom. And I asked once, if you didn't do drugs in high school or college, why didn't you? I had no idea what people would say. That's why I asked the question. And incredible how many said, because my mother would kill me. What a great response. What a terrific mother. So that was fear of mom. If I took drugs, I feared my mother's reaction. I didn't hold her in awe. I feared her. That's good. That's now, ideally, you love your parents and you have a whole series of emotions. That's fine. But there's no law to love your parents. Either you do or you don't. But there is a law to honor your parents and to fear them. Fear of parents is a healthy thing. Not fear of being beaten. Not walking around quaking in fear and being scared of your parents. No, everybody understands what is meant there. If you don't act right, you'll have to answer to your father and or mother. That's good. That's good. Coddled is not a good thing. And that's a big source of the problems in the Western world. Affluence and secularism and a therapeutic outlook on life. I didn't mention the therapeutic outlook in my previous mentioning of this, but that's another big problem. A lot of therapists. Oh, you got to love your child unconditionally. Got to love your child unconditionally. Got to love your child unconditionally. Who said so? Yeah, when your child is one, yeah. When your child is 12, when your child is 20, unconditionally, no matter how you act, I'm there to love you. Well, maybe it's not a great idea. I've talked about unconditional love, right? On the fireside chat. Yes, I mentioned it because I think it's a terrible idea. I think it's for babies, not for adults. Well, coddled kids make frightened adults. That's the theme. And now to you and your questions, and we begin. Oh, you already took care of the volume. Here we go.
Hi, Dennis. My name is Maddie. I'm from Thousand Oaks, California. My question is, in a time like this where Christianity is almost looked down on as in schools and the workplace, where can we as Christians convey our faith to others and where should it be accepted?
So by where should it be accepted, I assume she means where is it acceptable to do so, I think, right?
Like, yeah. Not in school.
Right. So that's those are very good questions. So let's see. Basically, it's where can Christians convey their faith to others and where should it be accepted? So it's a very interesting question, very important question. And by the way, I'm always touched at how many Christians open up to me about their faith because they know how supportive I am. Even though I'm not Christian, I'm Jewish. But without Christianity, the West is doomed. Okay, just I want to make that clear. I mean, it's just, it may be doomed, by the way, because things that substitute for Christianity are pretty unhealthy, like fascism, communism, and Nazism. Pretty bad. And the collapse now of so many values. People aren't having children in our secular West. It's literally committing suicide. The post-Christian West is committing suicide, literally. When you don't have children, it's the end of your nation. Simple, it's not complex stuff. So where can you convey it? Yes, first of all, I agree with your supposition. Christianity is being attacked tremendously. That is exactly correct. It is. Because the left understands that the only organized opposition is religious. There is conservative secular opposition, but over the one that really gets to them is religious. And I even know from PragerU videos, many of our videos are attacked, which I'm not surprised and actually gratified. It means that they're being watched and they're effective. But the ones that get the most mockery and hate are the ones that advocate God's existence or the Ten Commandments. I know, because I give those a lot. It's quite remarkable how much vitriol, I mean, just hatred, seething with hatred to advocate God's existence or the necessity of the Judeo-Christian value system. So yes, Christians, especially your age, are having a very hard time. That's right. You're laughed at, you're mocked, you're dismissed. And you're the only group that really is, other than white males. You're really the only group that one is allowed to mock, Christians. And that's true for black Christians, white Christians, male Christians, female Christians. There it doesn't matter. Christians are a nuisance to the prevailing ideology. Where can you advocate? You can advocate anywhere you want. And I mean that. There are no rules where you can't. But you have to be aware of how you come across when you do. So it's very important for religious people to be sophisticated and not sound like simpleton believers. That's a really important part of religious advocacy. I'm good at that. I'm not being conceited. I just know what I'm good at. I am good at making a sophisticated case for religion because I have a very sophisticated view of religion. So it doesn't come with difficulty to me. But you have to learn how to do that. It's not helpful for a Christian to walk over to a non-Christian and say, you know, without Christ, you're going to hell or you're not saved. It's not going to be well received. And I understand that. You have to make the argument for the necessity of God and the insights of the Bible. And that's good. That works. But just to tell people you're doomed if you don't have my belief doesn't reflect well on your belief. Is that fair to say? I'm asking two Christians, so I want to be obviously fair, but I don't want you to fool yourselves into what it is that you're advocating. Advocate the importance of Judeo-Christian values, even though you want people to accept Christ. That's perfectly legit that you do. But you have to start before that. You have to start with the importance of this value system. Then people will listen to you. Okay. And by the way, a lot of religious people don't know how to do that. It's not their fault. Nobody taught them. Press home to open. Okay, I did. Eduardo, 40 years old, in Ribeirão Preto in Brazil. Dear Mr. Prager, please say hello to Otto. Hi. I have been listening to your fireside chats for some time now. I have a question. I just listened to your episode on the moral case for the death penalty. I understand your arguments. They are very logical and the moral aspects are clear to me. But as a Catholic, it is difficult for me to accept capital punishment. How would you comment on that subject from the biblical perspective? Thank you very much. Well, you should read my essay in my book of essays. I have a book of 44 essays on 44 subjects. It's a great introduction to my thinking. It's called Think a Second Time. So I have one on the death penalty. By the way, you should know, a lot of Catholics don't know this, there are a lot of Catholics who have written on behalf of the death penalty as believing Catholics, as traditional believing Catholics. I've had some of them on my radio show. They make very compelling arguments. You are not obligated as a Catholic to oppose capital punishment. Even if it's the Pope's position, unless he has declared it to be a statement of papal infallibility, which has only been exercised twice in the history of the Catholic Church, and both on theological, not moral matters. You are free as a Catholic to believe in capital punishment. And my challenge to Catholics is, do you think God was wrong? God's pretty adamant about killing murderers, premeditated murderers. and two witnesses and a whole host of conditions. Do you know that when God creates the world, one of the first laws he gives is, if a man sheddeth the blood of another man, by man shall his blood be shed. By man, not by me, God. You have to deal with that. By the way, here's another one for you. There are five books in the five books of Moses, obviously. The Pentateuch, the Torah, the basis of all morality and ethics and wisdom, for that matter, in the rest of the Bible, the first five books, for both Christians and Jews. And do you know there's only one law in all five books? That murderers be put to death. Yeah, it's pretty important stuff. The challenge is not for you Catholics who support the death penalty. It's for Catholics who believe in the Bible who don't support the death penalty for murder and only premeditated murder. All of those things are true. Now, the arguments, I'm not going to go into them now because have I done a thing on capital punishment?
Episode 180. Is there a moral case for the death penalty?
There you go. Episode 180. That's only 31 episodes ago. Antonio 33 from Sweden. How'd you get the name Antonio if you're a Swede? Okay. I won the green card lottery and I'm leaving everything for a chance at the life I have not found in Sweden. A life with marriage, meaningful work, and a community that shares my conservative values. In other words, he's coming to America. I'm grateful, but also afraid, because I'll soon be in a foreign town, alone and seeking employment. Could you offer any encouragement? Well, it's going to be a challenge in the beginning. That is true. And I suspect that within 1 year, you will have friends. You might even have a serious girlfriend. I wouldn't worry if I were you. You're obviously a vibrant young person. In case young man in your case, and you will find a job. People are aching to find good workers in whatever field you're in, any field in America today. This is truly a worker's world. You have the choice of work. And Americans are quite friendly. You'll certainly more than Swedes are. Not that to say that there aren't any friendly Swedes or there aren't any unfriendly Americans. Of course, both are true. But I know Sweden, I know Scandinavia, I know Europe, and I don't think even Swedes would deny they're not the warmest people. It's just not their nature. Their Lutheran background, the winter, the long winter background, whatever it might be. But Americans, what might help is don't go to New York. That might help. For that matter, probably don't come to LA either, where I live. If I were you, I would consider, Tennessee and Florida and any of the conservative states. I think you're more likely to find kindred spirits there. I remember... meeting a French woman in Florida. She had spent, in France, I'm sorry. Yes, this is what happened. I gave a lecture in Nice, France, and I was taken to a very fancy restaurant. There was a very pretty young French woman who was our waitress, and she spoke to us in English, and it was a good English. But I speak French, and I like to practice my French in France. So I realized, however, that her English was better than my French. So if your language is better than mine, I speak in your language. That's my rule. If I speak your language better than you speak my language, then I speak your language. That's my rule of thumb when I travel. So she spoke a better English than I spoke French. And I asked her, how do you speak English so well? She said, oh, I spent a year in Tampa, Florida, which I consider a very friendly place, by the way. I like Tampa a lot. And she thought Americans were the friendliest people, friendlier than the French. It was very interesting to hear that from her. By the way, you ready to end with a really funny self-embarrassing moment. So I said to her, you know, I would love to interview you on my radio show in America. She said, oh, that sounds interesting. Said, so I said, yes, I broadcast from my hotel room. And then I realized, oh, my God. Oh, what, that must sound like the weirdest line this woman ever got from a guy. I broadcast from my hotel room. There was no way out. I was doomed. Said, forget it. Forget I even asked. It was totally true, by the way. I broadcast from my hotel room. But it doesn't go over well. I try, bring two friends. Bring your mother. It was a very embarrassing moment when I said that. Anyway, she never came, and she never came on the show. I don't blame her. But it was a very, very funny moment for me. You will do fine, and when you do come to America, get in touch with me. I'd love to meet you. So, everybody, don't be afraid. You know what I didn't deal with? Maybe not next time necessarily, but in a future fireside chat. How do you conquer your fears? How do you stop being afraid? Okay, everybody, on behalf of the crew and Otto, thanks for watching. See you next week. Thank you for watching this video. To keep PragerU videos free, please consider making a tax-deductible donation.